WO Radio.
You're listening to Radio Aryan at RadioAryan.com.
Hello and welcome to Truth Without Radio. Today's date is the 4th of March 2016 and you're listening to me, Sven Longshanks. And today, as always, I'm joined by my co-host, the producer of Adolf Hitler, The Greatest Story Never Told, Mr. Dennis Wise. How are you doing today, Dennis?
I'm fine, Sven. I'm really good. I hope you have too, and I hope the listeners are in good shape as well.
Yeah, I'm feeling pretty good. I just must remember here to give out another couple of thank yous. I know I started last week by thanking a few people. I've got two other people that I should have thanked at the time. I really should have thanked Andre. So this is a big thank you going out to Andrew Anglin for publishing all our Radio Aryan content, which is a huge help to us, and getting it out to other people. And even though Andre can't get a good enough connection to make programs with us at the moment, he's still continuing to publish all our Radio Aryan ones, so really thankful to him for that, very grateful for that. And also a big thank you to Noel Wise from the White Genocide Project, who does all the idents for us. I'm not capable of making those flashy idents up. Noel does them for us, and he does a really good job of it. So there's two thank yous there that I missed out last week. Okay, well, this week we don't have Messerschmitt with us, but he will be back in the next program that we do, the next live program that we do. So this week you've just got me and Dennis, and we've got a few subjects that we want to cover this week. We're going to go into a little bit into Luciferianism and the Antichrist, and we're also going to go into Eisenhower's death camps. But first of all, I think we're going to go into a side project that you've just started, Dennis. You're telling me before we began tonight that you've started doing another of your excellent mini documentaries, where you condense down a longer documentary into a smaller one. So do you want to let the listeners know what it is you've been working on?
Well, normally after I finish an episode, because of the research is intense, I like to take a week off, but last week we managed to get one of the episodes out pretty rapid. So I thought, I will definitely take a week off this week, which I did from that documentary. Then somebody kindly sent me an interview of James Back, the person, the author of the book Other Losses, who was in an interview, an Australian interview, which I listened to and found quite fascinating, and decided I would condense. It was something like an hour long, but I'm used to doing that with the documentaries with Communism by the Back Door. And I thought I'd condense it down to under 15 minutes, which I have managed to do. I've done the soundtrack now, and I'm going to be doing, the pictures shortly in the next day or so. So I really found it fascinating, because even though it was mentioned in Hitler, The Greatest Story Never Told, a lot of people, I noticed on some comments when I went on to the actual video, I took a look at the original video, and people were still giving it, didn't really happen, and denying the fact that at least 1.5 million Germans were killed after the war. And he speaks well of what goes on at that time, and how his book was buried, and how he was chastised for again revealing the truth.
Now, who was that? Who was that particular? Whose book was it?
Okay, it was James Back, who was a Canadian, obviously of French descent, who was on the side of the Allies in the war, obviously, but was a researcher after the war. And if you want me to tell you, the early part of how we found out about it all, he was actually investigating this French person called Monsieur Le Potier, who had helped some Jews escape some camps when the Germans had occupied France. They wanted the Jews shipping into the work camps across the regions, and these Jews came to him for help. He obviously had some kind of contacts, and which he did. He helped them escape, being sent away, and so James Back went over to actually live with him for a couple of days to research his work. Meanwhile, while he was researching that particular incidents, he came across letters from numerous Germans thanking Michel Lepartier for helping them, which he found quite puzzling. So when he questioned Mr. Lepartier, he was told, yes, I helped the Germans as well. So he found it a little bit confusing of why somebody like that who would help the Jews one minute but help Germans in another instance. And so eventually, when he went to Germany, he managed to find some Germans who he had helped and arranged some interviews, etc. But by the way, previous to that, he'd spotted some French farmers who he organised a meeting in the kitchen for these farmers to come in, and there was more than what he expected. And they were telling him about how they used to take the Germans to these camps some milk just to give, and some were in tears saying that these poor guys were just dying like flies. So this got his interest up even more. So he went to Germany and actually interviewed a German who was there, and you know, he said that he owed his life to Mr. Lepartier. And so from then on, he investigated the situation, and it just went from bad to worse of how the plan to eliminate, you know, the Germans after the war went about, which, you know, secretly at one point, you know, did happen.
Well, yeah, and I'm surprised that they were actually able to even smuggle milk to them, because if they were caught smuggling food to the German prisoners of war, they would be shot on the spot.
It's quite true. But apparently that came later, because these were the French camps at the moment. They had about 750,000 were killed by the French, because the French treated the Germans just as the Americans did. But a little bit later, I think it was Eisenhower who came out with the law. And this is interesting, by the way, that anybody who not just brought food to the camps, but gathered food would be shot at or shot. And in some cases, some women were shot.
It was a deliberate starvation of them, wasn't it? They had all these supplies. The supplies were sent there to be fed to the Germans to keep them alive, more than enough. And they were just left. The supplies were just left there to rot. And so were the Germans.
I mean, Germany after the war was just apparently one big prison camp. Like I said, this all later. Not too long after this, stemmed from the fact of the Morgenthau plan, the Jewish assistant to Roosevelt, who put the plan together. And what I didn't know, you know, I mean, it skipped me, this one, is that this was a plan to eliminate, which I'd heard about, 20 million, at least 20 million Germans. What I didn't know was that Roosevelt and Churchill signed it.
Wow. So they signed the Morgenthau plan.
They signed it. The only problem was it got leaked to the press, and Roosevelt got cold feet and more or less said, well, you know, how could I sign this type of thing, which obviously he did, and kind of backed off from it. But what happened then was they did it underhandedly and did it secretly.
So it was a written down, we've got evidence that there was a plan to exterminate all the German people, got the evidence that's what they did. They starved the Germans, 1.5 million of them they killed. So you've got evidence of them planning to exterminate a nation of people, and you've got the physical evidence, you've got the forensic evidence, you've got all the pieces that we don't actually have to justify that, say that the Holocaust happened. It's almost like a complete symmetrical thing here, isn't it? You've got evidence for this happening and no evidence for the Holocaust.
It's worse. It's worse because not only did they kill 1.5 million in the camps, but at least 6 million civilians died of starvation as well.
The 6 million Germans died, not 6 million Jews.
At least. And then don't forget, you've got all the Germans coming in who were banned from, the provinces which were handed over to Poland. And at the end of the war, you had maybe 12 million Germans just pushing prams with the belongings in a bag. barefoot walking across Europe. So then you've probably got another few million on top of there who died. So James Beck believes it's the biggest homicidal crime ever. Even, you know, he actually says with the possibility we don't quite know how many Stalin killed in the Ukraine, but certainly it outnumbers any other disaster in history.
Well, it must have been horrific, absolutely horrific conditions, and all this is covered up, hidden away. But there is evidence there. There is cold hard facts there that we can produce to show to people, whereas there isn't for the Holler hoax. And when you think that they were pushing all those people, removing them from their homes and ethnic cleansing them and telling them that they've got to work their way right the way across Europe with no help whatsoever, and they're quite happy to do that to the Germans, and yet we're told today, well, there's no possible way that we can say to these people trying to invade our countries at France, well, you'll have to go back home. We're told that we can't possibly do that. And yet, and they keep saying, oh, this is the worst removal of people since World War II. And yet in World War II, they were the ones responsible for the removal of the people, and they didn't mind doing it then. And yet they do mind it when it's non-whites.
Yeah, well, it's an agenda, isn't it? Well, in both cases, it was an agenda. So you're quite right, yeah. I mean, like, even I didn't think of that connection. But once he'd found the story and he wrote the book, obviously, he said, you know, it was probably one of the most dangerous books at that time, revealing just what the Allies had done. And so he went to a professor in Cambridge for advice, and he said, suggested taking it to a guy called, a professor in the US called Stephen Ambrose. And when he showed the work to Stephen Ambrose, his first reactions was, you know, wow, this is unbelievable. What a great job you've done. You know, you've really got these, you've got Eisenhower and his cronies by the neck with this, you know, and he actually helped the guy, he helped James Beck get on TV on MBS. He helped him get in the Time magazine. He had a lot of contacts, this professor. But then suddenly, overnight, everything turned. And Mr. Beck believes that he was got to. And from that moment on, he was then being criticized by Stephen Ambrose, who eventually managed to get the book buried. So there was a little twist there. So, as usual, the truth is obviously hidden. And he suffered as well, because obviously now he was an author who, pretty similar to David Irving, you know, would have, you know, the publishers take a dislike to anybody who finds these things or finds anything positive about, you know, the war, World War II on the German side. And so, you know, the meetings that he used to attend or the talks he used to attend and all dropped, and financially he would struggle.
Yeah, inconvenient history. They really don't like inconvenient history or people publishing different opinions on history to their own ones. I find it interesting that he discovered this while he was researching somebody that supposedly rescued the Jews. And there was there's a famous Finnish chap that went rescuing the Jews, and they shot him later on. They killed him. The Zionist Jews killed him. I forget who he was, but he was given an award for rescuing hundreds of Jews, and then later on the Jews killed him. They didn't think nothing of killing him after he'd supposedly rescued so many of them. It's a shame I can't remember the guy's name. He was someone from Finland. Perhaps somebody in the chat room might remember the name and could help me out and put it in the chat room there. Because that's an interesting story as well. That's somebody that we were asked to look into.
Sure.
Similar.
I was just annoyed at the fact that people were still denying it. You know, somebody came on and actually quoted this Stephen Ambrose and said that he'd said this and said that. But this was only after he praised and helped James Beck, you know, publicise the facts on TV, etc., you know, mainstream MBS. So, but I'll tell you what's interesting as well, and never crossed my mind as well. They actually arrested, apart from the really old and the really young, German males, all of them. And if you remember, there's a clip on YouTube you must have seen that I used in a documentary of all the women clearing up all the rubbish and all the rubble and all standing in line. There were only women. And apparently what what had happened was all the men had been put in these camps, and these women were left to clean up their own city. Unbelievable. Because, you know, it just didn't cross my mind. They'd obviously been raped as well by the Russians. So that, you know, the terror was, you know, I mean, it must have been unreal at that time. And you see these coloured pictures of one particular woman is sitting in a room with the wall blown out. I don't know if you can remember it or not, like, and they're sitting in these ruins in the middle of Berlin. Another thing, what annoyed me as well was the fact that I saw the other day that the Allies had quoted 25,000 had died in Dresden. Well, if you can remember, you know, the German cities were all flattened completely. And if you'd have done that to somewhere like Birmingham or London, completely, you know, burnt out buildings with just wasteland, I'm pretty sure more than 25,000 would have died, don't you think?
Oh, yeah, it was definitely more than that. If you think of how many people there would have been crowded into Dresden, the refugee centre, it was known as somewhere that wouldn't get bombed. It was filled with all the injured people, all the refugees from the area. It would have been filled with people. 25,000 is just not possible. If you think of the amount of people we have in Britain today, I think 70 million is their estimate. Think of how many there's going to be in a large city. Yeah, it's got to be nearly a million, probably more than that in London. So to say that it was just 25,000 at Dresden, yeah, it doesn't stack up. It doesn't stack up. I forget what the other estimates are in the hundreds, I think.
Yeah. Well, another thing we talked about is the actual conditions in the camps, because there was just left in the fields. It rained most of the time, and there'd no shelter, and they had to dig holes just like an animal to try and just burrow a hole to get out of the wind and the cold. And because they weren't being fed, I think one guy said he reckoned that it seen some of the food what the American soldiers were getting, and he reckoned they were getting at the most 1/10 of the rations to an American soldier. So they're out there in the cold and rain, no shelter. They've got no latrines or toilets. And it got to a point where they were so weak, some of the soldiers were so weak, that when it came to wanting to go to the toilet, they hadn't the strength to take the trousers down. And they just lay there in the mud, just in a terrible situation. It's a horrible, inhuman, how anybody could ever put people in that position is just beyond my way of thinking.
And you got refugees today on the BBC complaining that they're being asked to live inside a tent, and how they never would have left Syria if they'd known that they were going to be asked to live inside a tent. And this is in the warmth. This is in the warmth in the south of Europe, and they're complaining that they have to be in tents. And you think what was done to our people, they had to dig holes in the ground and live in holes in the ground. This is just atrocious, the way that they were treated. And it's all, of course, it's all kept hushed up. It's all kept hidden. I mean, who knows about these Eisenhower's death camps, apart from nationalists? Nobody.
Not many. This is it. Not many at all. Those what do know, obviously are biased in opinions. They come on YouTube like and just cast it aside. But it's such a story that I couldn't, again, I heard the interview. I mean, the Australian lady who was interviewing was quite stunned at times. I mean, when he told her about how the textbooks had been changed, she couldn't believe it. And obviously, I'd kind of discussed this in Adolf Hitler, The Greatest Story, where you couldn't even speak Adolf Hitler's name. I think it's up to 1950, for 5 years, people couldn't even emigrate. They had to do exactly as the Americans told them. They changed all the textbooks. And this is confirmed in the book The War Has Many Fathers, which has been translated into English. That's been confirmed how they changed the speeches of Hitler to make it out that he was the aggressor and the warmonger. Just incredible, really. And for 70 years, without the internet, I've said this many, many times, without the miracle of the internet, we don't know half of it, I'm sure now, but we wouldn't know anything at all if it wasn't for the internet.
And just to say to people that there's an interview that I did with Richard Edmonds this week, Aryan Insights interview, and he's talking about the denazification of Germany there and the Morgenthau Plan and what was done to Germany. So if people are interested in this subject and they haven't actually heard that interview yet, then they should go back and have a listen to that. And this was audio that you were listening to then? This wasn't actually James Black himself speaking? No.
Yeah, he was speaking. He was being interviewed by an Australian lady interviewer, and it was about an hour long. But I was so fascinated by it, and I'd seen previous comments saying that, you know, it never happened, that it just annoyed me to the point where I thought, well, I was going to have a week off, but I can't let this go. So, like I said, I've done the soundtrack, I'm hoping to put the pictures to it over the weekend. But it's just, it's heartbreaking because, not only was this going on in Germany, but I also know of the Blueberg massacre, what was going on down in the Balkans as well with the, Axis soldiers, and families, which had turned up in Austria, surrendered to the West because they felt, you know, they'd be more humane than surrendering to the Stalin and Tito, the communists. And eventually they were all sent back and the Cossacks were browbeaten back. The Croatians were lied to at Blueberg onto the trains and sent back to the deaths. First of all, some may be shot as soon as they got off the trains. I mean, I know some that committed suicide knowing what fate awaited them anyway on the trains. But many of the families were death marched across the country in Slovenia and Croatia. And they're only since the Balkan War ended in the 90s did these mass graves become discovered. So the evidence is all there, like I said earlier, and it's just one inhumane massacre of these people who were fighting for the freedom against communism, who were being helped by the West, and then obviously, you know, the West then sent them back to Stalin thanks to the Yalta Agreement where they signed, you know, and against all Geneva conventions. And even Eisenhower then was the forerunner of George Bush. Even Eisenhower, the Americans, the French and the British had more or less come up with the Geneva Convention, ignored it completely, called the Germans and the Axis soldiers enemy combatants. Doesn't that ring a bell? And now you've got no rights at all. You haven't even got rights to food and water.
Do you know if they have any memorials to the Blomberg massacre and what happened there? Now that do they have memorials there? Memorial days, days of mourning.
Surprise, surprise, surprise! Yeah, there's trips every year to remember the Blomberg massacre, which was a small border town in Austria, and there's great attempts now to stop these taking place. Surprise, surprise.
Well, I bet this is uncomfortable stuff, isn't it, for the West to hear about? So it's not just them that want it silenced. You've also got the Antifa, the communists. They're against all of this. Anyone speaking the truth about what happened during that war. When you think that it's people remembering people that died fighting for their country, and they're being attacked for wanting to remember the people that died, you know, to protect them. It's terrible.
They wasn't fighting for the country when they died. The war had finished.
Even worse, yeah.
That's the crux.
I was thinking in Latvia and Lithuania, in the Baltic states, when they tried to remember their heroes that fought in the war, and they were absolved of crimes at Nuremberg. That it was said that they only fought on the Eastern Front. They only fought against the communists. And because they did fight against the communists, a lot of their people were able to escape and get to the rest of Europe and get away from them. So they laid down their lives. But because they'd been given German weapons and they'd formed legions with the SS, the SS had trained them, and they were fighting with the Germans against the communists, because of that, they get accused of that they're neo-Nazis and they're not allowed to have their national holidays, and the EU puts pressure on them, and the League Against Nazism tries to sabotage their events. It's terrible when you think these people are trying to honour the memory of their ancestors that fought, you know, to protect them. It should have nothing to do with today's politics. nothing to do with it at all. And yet, still, well, that's what happens. It gets silenced.
Can I just say, in Austria, where this, you know, the people make these trips every year, where they're trying to stop it. It is no different from this. Is, Austria was the place where they removed the headstone of Hitler's parents. So it's no surprise that they're trying to wipe this history completely out of the history books, because they did that anyway with all the textbooks. So, you know, it's something which needs to be, I feel, shown and for people to realise just exactly the extent of the cover-up the Allies went about.
Well, it's like the, you know, the boots on the opposite foot, isn't it? It's the opposite way around to how we're taught. You were told, oh, the communists did that. The communists rewrote things and touched up photographs so that you there were people that were missing from them, and the communists locked people up for disagreeing with the government, and the communists told people they were mad for disagreeing with the government. And what have we got today? Well, we've got people, historians and scientists and engineers and really brave, courageous people that are locked up in prison for daring to have a different opinion on recent history. And you've got people that try to point out people that have been killed during the war, and they want that hushed up because of the people that did the killing were the supposed good guys. It really is the opposite way around to how we've been taught, isn't it?
Well, there's proof of that as well, because apparently it mentions the fact that how the textbooks were altered. It says that, and it's quite true, that most of history is handed down by the academia. And obviously the academia are given, you know, the story of World War II, and then they go ahead and confirm everything. Otherwise, you know, they're in hock as well. So he goes on about and explains, I mean, you must have heard of Willy Brandt, once the Chancellor of Germany. And he took over what the academia were writing in Germany after the war. And he actually specifically told them not to offend the Americans, not to write anything that will offend the Americans. And Willy Brandt, believe it or not, was a guest at the Bohemian Grove at one point. So I thought of him there. So it's no surprise. And like I said, you know, the Germans are that generation, and since then have been brought up on these textbooks, believing that the Nazis were guilty of all these atrocities, for starting the war, for being the warmongers, for wanting to rule the world. And now they carry around this huge guilt, and have done ever since 1945, which you can plainly feel or see when you meet a German, unless he's a communist.
Well, the people that they think are in charge, the people they think that are their government, are actually there to persecute them. The members of their government, Merkel, signed up to this UN group, and the UN was formed before it was called the UN. It was formed to destroy Germany. It was the Allies that were formed to destroy Germany. And Merkel signed up to that, and the government signed up to it. So the occupation government of Germany is signed up to this plan to destroy the German people. And yet the Germans are unaware of that.
Yeah, people don't realise that Germany's still occupied. That's the joke of it all, because there's never been a peace treaty.
No, I mean, we're still at war. The war has never ended. Yeah. And the government are signed up to this war against their supposed own people. And there's some evidence to show that Merkel has got Jewish descent. So, I mean, that shouldn't really surprise us. But just to go back to what you were saying there about history told by the academics, I mean, there was a time when history was told in the folk songs. History was told in song. And the song came from the bards, and it came from the people. And yet, of course, now we're told, oh, well, those old folk songs and folk stories, folk tales, they're all myths and legends. They're all fantasy. That's all a load of rubbish. But that's the history as it was told by our people. It comes out in the folk songs. And in the folk memory.
Yeah, there's proof. There's still more proof of all this, because apparently, according to Mr. Beck, and I don't have no reason to doubt him, because obviously he, like me, has to make sure that his book was absolutely correct, because it would have been gone through with a fine tooth comb. And just like the documentary of mine, I knew I had to get it right. Otherwise, you know, I would have people jumping on my back. he actually stated that one of the biggest, if not the biggest, relief operation was after the war, when countries around the world realized it had leaked out that these Germans were starving. And places like Argentina and America and Canada and China, they all sent food to help these, you know, who maybe they once regarded as an enemy, but now regarded, you know, humanely, that people can't be allowed to starve, and sent food and clothes and money. But again, this has been, you know, swept under the carpet. It's such a, it is, according to him, you know, one of the biggest organizations of help ever.
And this was all kept from them. Was this kept from them as well as the official army rations? Was the charitable goods kept from them as well?
Well, that I don't know. But what must have happened is it must have leaked out somehow that these Germans were starving, and you know, the food was there, like we mentioned early on. Everything was there, the tents. Even the French refused to, you know, to help them out that way. They just put them in a field. It must have leaked out somehow. And these countries organized these, you know, packages of food, et cetera, to be sent to Germany. Whether or not they got them, I'll leave that, you know, for another day.
Well, when people hear this, oh, this is the greatest movement of people since the end of World War II, when the people were moved across Europe, you should say to them, yeah, well, do you know what else happened at that time? 1.5 million Germans starved to death in the camps where they were put in these camps, these holding camps for them. They weren't people that had been fighting in the war. It's just all the men that were put in these camps and starved to death. And they didn't have tents. They didn't have shipping containers like these quote-unquote refugees are being given over in France. They had none of that. None of that at all. Our own
people. Barefooted. And we're pram in a bag and then told to go. And what they actually did, they left these eastern parts of Prussia, which once belonged to Germany and were now handed over to Poland, for instance. What it meant was a huge influx of Germans of 6 to 12 million, I believe, and maybe even 15 million, were heading to Germany, which was now de-sized down. It was a smaller country now than what it was before the war. So you've got all this influx coming in and nobody with no food being given to the people already in Germany. You've got to be talking just mass millions just murdered, killed, you know, with starvation.
Evil, just pure wickedness. These people that masquerade as being good people, they pretend to be good people, and yet they're really evil. Now, it reminds me of this just this week. We've seen Hillary Clinton talking about, oh, we need more love and kindness, and yet you've got this really evil, wicked woman there. Think of the way she was when Gaddafi was killed, and she was, oh, we came, we saw, he died. This woman's evil, really evil woman. You've got in the Bible, it says we struggle against powers and principalities in high places. And that means we struggle against these wicked, evil people in government, these tyrants that are in power. And they pretend to be good. They put on this face of being good, and they talk all this rhetoric of how they're human rights and how they're helping people. And they're not. They're just pure evil, evil people. It says Satan is an angel of light.
She's actually Rothschild's choice, you know, because this is what worries me about the election, because she's already won some primaries, which they bent the rules for it to actually so she can win them, because the opponents have to win something like over 75% to even defeat her, because of some kind of technicality. You know, these boards have already cast their votes, and they have a large amount of say in these elections. So she's actually looking the hot favourite now, but she's always going to be the hot favourite. But her husband actually is as we've mentioned before, went to Oxford for this Rhodes scholarship, which is there for people from around, talented people around the world, where the Rothschilds bring over to England, educate them into this one world government system, and then send them back out into the world back to their own countries to eventually, you know, rule the countries, or, you know, the governments get places on the Council of Foreign Relations, etc. And it's just a worldwide, since 1945, this has been going on in all countries. And so Clinton is just one of them. She is, you know, Rothschild's choice, which worries me about Trump. A lot of people can't make their minds up about Trump, but to me, he's at the moment, he's self-funding. He's a multi-billionaire, so he's got no worries about that. And if he is saying, let's say, for instance, like he is the real deal and he's saying what he's saying, he's genuine about it, I worry for him. Because if they can take out President Kennedy, they can take out Donald Trump. If he's working for the Rothschilds, then, you know, it's the same old story where, you know, they're back both Republican and Democrats, because it looks like they're going to be the two front runners. But I worry for him, because are they going to come all this way, get so close to total world domination, and have somebody like Donald Trump say, no, we're going to do this instead?
It is a worry, but he does come across as being genuine to me. But I mean, the point I was trying to make is they put across this image of being helpful to people, whereas really they're really evil. And you know, this brings me to this second subject that you wanted to discuss, Dennis, this Luciferianism and Lucifer, because it says that Lucifer will appear as an angel of light. So it will appear as being the good guy. But in actual fact, he is evil. And that's what all this diversity language is. It's all, you know, diversity, celebrate diversity. It's wonderful. We're all brothers. But what that means is interbreed, miscegenate, and extinguish and cause the greatest race that's ever lived to go extinct. The most advanced race that has within its knowledge the means to feed the world, clothe the world, reach the moon, reach the stars, cause that race to be extinguished and to go extinct. You know, there's got to be nothing more evil than that, because once the white people are gone, there's nothing left for the rest of the world. And yet it's all couched in this wonderful, friendly, diversity is wonderful language. It's like the Human Rights Act. Isn't it wonderful? Everyone has human dignity and human rights. But that's just an excuse. It started out as an excuse so that the Jews could collect money after the war from both sides, whereas before they couldn't do that. But it's a human right to make as much money as you can from people. It's a human right to the family. So they say, well, once you've got these refugees here, they'll be able to bring over all the rest of them, all the rest of their family. So they use this language, this positive type language, to appeal to people's emotions. And it's just an excuse for them to be incredibly wicked and evil.
They always do. Most ideas sound good for 5 minutes. Like, you know, feminism, for instance, everyone's thinking, oh yeah, women's equal rights, and we can go out now, we've got two wages and all this. But really, it was just a scam to get, you know, more people, you know, the family, destroy the family and get the state to get all the children earlier. So it looks good for 5 minutes. You know, it's the usual case, but, you know, in the long run, it's detrimental to our race and families. But can I just say, at this stage of the game, like, a lot of people, you know, think which is quite true, if you believe in Lucifer, then you must believe in God. And there's a number of people at the moment who are not really looking at the World War II as religious. And my say on that is the fact that it doesn't really matter if you're religious or not. I've come to the conclusion now that it's got to be and has been a war between Christianity, or, if you like, Christian culture, against Judaism, the Jews. This has been going on for quite some time. The Masons have even been involved in that same war for over 2,000 years. So most people think that the Masons started with the Templars, where in fact it's actually Jewish in origin. It goes back to the days of Christ, and there's evidence of rabbis speaking about that as well. So another way of hiding the fact that World War II was a war to destroy Christianity. And ever since World War II, that is exactly what's been going on. But in a much more softer approach, they've infiltrated the Catholic Church and with all the paedophilia, which was, you know, is a stain of Freemasonry, has brought a lot of people to think now that, you know, religion is a waste of time. It's caused more wars than it's worth. But that doesn't really matter. That does not come into the question, because it doesn't care what. They don't care what you think, they don't care what I think, and they don't care what anybody thinks, because this is their agenda. And they want to bring in this communist one-world government with one religion, which is why they're actually having a war with Islam at the moment, because they actually do believe in God, in their God. But everyone will not be allowed into this world without bowing down to Lucifer. Now, the question comes about who is Lucifer? And in the West, a lot of people believe Lucifer to be Satan himself. But there's people like Bill Cooper who actually believe Lucifer was an agent of Satan. And I was listening to a Tibetan monk talk once and describing how the West mistakenly regard him as Satan, where the two entities are two different, or should I say the two people are two different entities. But I believe, the Bible said that the angels were cast out from heaven and Lucifer was cast as Satan in the Bible, I'm sure. And so from that day on, I've always looked at it from that point of view. But it's an interesting subject because, I read somewhere the other day that the Antichrist, when he comes, which the Jews believe he will come, and the way the world is shaping at the moment, you know, the end times do look to be not too far away, that it will be the Antichrist who will join the world all together, and then he will bring on Lucifer and the fallen angels, as, you know, most people in Hollywood raise demons.
Well, I think Antichrist can be singular and it can be plural. When it's first used, it's anyone that denies Christ is an Antichrist, and the people denying Christ at the time were the Jews. So saying that the Jews are the Antichrist, they were the Antichrist then, and they're still the Antichrist now, because they're still against Christ today. They're the opposite side of it. E. Michael Jones makes this point when he says that when they rejected Logos, they rejected the order of the universe in the form of Christ, and they became the agents of disorder in the universe, the agents of chaos. But of course, they were the agents of chaos before that anyway. So I think that's the Antichrist thing. And there are obviously Antichrist today. The UN is an Antichrist. It's an Antichrist organization. And there are figureheads for the Antichrist, figureheads like Obama, for instance, and all the things he does in the world. But Lucifer itself, that's a Latin word, and it means morning star or light bearer. And Christ is called the morning star in Revelation. So you get this confusion and you get Luciferians and Satanists saying, oh, well, Christ was a Lucifer as well. And Lucifer isn't really a bad guy. But what it's talking about there is you've got the morning star part. Christ says that he saw Lucifer fall from, or saw Satan and his angels as stars in heaven. And he saw St. Michael having a fight with Satan and cast Satan out of heaven, and Satan fell to earth like the star. So the morning star falling out of heaven is Satan falling out of heaven. Like the morning star falling out of heaven. So like a star falling out of heaven is Satan, which is where the Lucifer word comes from. But morning star itself is a light, like a morning star, because Christ is the light that no one can see. And yet we have the sun, we see light all around us, but that's an imposter. That doesn't actually give us life. That sustains life once it's already been created. The light that actually gives us life, we cannot see. There's a verse in the Bible that says Christ is the light that no man can see. So the black sun is a symbol for the light that no man can see. And we're told that that's Christ. That's creation. That's the creative spirit. But the sun that we do see, and the sun worship, and the Lucifer, Lucifer again is supposed to be the illuminator, the one who brings illumination to people. That's all in this life. That's all in this corrupted stage where we're told that, mm-hmm. that Satan has the control. He's the king of this earth. He tempts Christ with all these things that he can see, but he can't actually get inside people. It's all just materialism. So Satanism and Luciferianism is materialism, and you've got the sun there, and that's as an image. The sun is an imposter for the real source of life, which is the black sun, which again is symbolized with the swastika as well. It's this thing that the symbols that the white race have and symbols for the one true God. And also, if you think of Lucifer as the light bearer, if you think of the hunter that goes out hunting and he carries his lamp and the lamp dazzles, you know, what he's hunting for, and he shoots it, or the farmer is out in his Range Rover and he puts the lamps on and suddenly sees the rabbits and the hare, they're all transfixed by those lights. And then the farmer runs them over. You know, we become hypnotized by the light. The light bearer shines that light in our eyes, dazzles us with all the trinkets and the baubles and all the fancy things, and we become trapped by them. And that's it. We gradually become further away from God. So that's, you know, this is the light bearer side of it. and the illumination side of it and the enlightenment side of it. Another word that's associated with it is a liberator. So you're liberated from morals, basically. Sexual liberation, yeah, women's liberation, all of that is Luciferian. And this is why you've got Saul Alinsky in his book, Rules for Radicals, dedicated to Lucifer, supposedly because he rebelled against God. Well, rebelling against the order. And that's the Jews again. That's the chaos again. That's this rebelling against the order, and which is what Adolf Hitler stood for. He stood for order. He stood against time. He stood against these forces of darkness in this war between darkness and light. So I think that people that claim to be National Socialists and yet then claim to be following Lucifer are confused. They've got the wrong name, you know, and they won't succeed until they're on the right side of things. A lot of people are confused by this. Go on.
Sorry, yeah. There's a reason why they're covering up the fact that Germany were Christian, because, you know, one of the most devout Christian countries in Europe, you know, at the time of the Second World War, it always had been, apart from when under the Weimar Republic, and, you know, and before then, the Russian Revolution, as we explained last week in the usury episode, where it wasn't a class revolution. It just didn't make sense because a billionaire Jew had funded Trotsky. So what's a billionaire trying to fund a class war for? No, it made more sense when it was, you know, the two had in common was their ethnicity, were the hatred of Christian culture. And then they did that with Germany, destroyed Germany, and they've been doing it ever since. But meanwhile, people don't believe many people claim that the Nazis were cults. It's, you know, they weren't actually Christians. And even when they can't prove it, they turn around and said, yeah, but after the war, he would have done this and he would have done that. Well, you know, that's just hearsay. There's no actual proof. The only proof I see is a Christian who went to help Spain, when Spain was under threat of communism in the Spanish Civil War, and then he invaded the Soviet Union because the communists were about to invade Europe, which was another great Christian activity, if you like. And then as his troops were going through the Ukraine, they were being blessed by the Ukrainians. I'm sure the Soviet communist Bolsheviks knew exactly what was standing in front of them. It was a Christian soldier coming to eliminate them. But all this has been hidden from history because... And the Holocaust plays a big part in this as well, because as long as this Holocaust and this guilt thing carries, nobody wants to, you know, research that side of it anyway. You know, they're just looking at Germans evil and they probably were occultists type of thing. Where all the time the Lucis Trust today, which is in the same offices as the United Nations, they believe that Lucifer didn't get chased out of heaven, but the fallen angels came down to help mankind. And the Antichrist will return. You know, this isn't a new thing for them. They'll say we'll return when we have enough love in this world, because, as quote in the Communism by the Backdoor documentary, this leader of the Lucis Trust says, you know, there has to be enough love in the world, because if there's not enough love in the world, then, you know, to bring in something classed as evil is not a good thing. There has to be enough love there. And even she's making that point. So... But for these people who don't believe this, it's fine. You know, I'm not trying to convert anybody. What I'm trying to say is, I'm convinced this is going to happen, whether people are religious or not. These people believe in Lucifer, and you know, if you believe in Lucifer, you believe in God, and everything they've been doing is anti-God since the days of Babylon, which is why you say today, like, you know, gay marriage and all this turns against God.
Well, yeah, I think when they say, well, what we need is more loving, what they mean is what they want is more perverted sex. They want more homosexual sex. Yeah, they want more pedophilia. That's what they mean when they say they want more love. And when you've got Hillary Clinton saying, oh, we want more love and kindness, what she means there is what we want is to flood America with the whole of South America and breed out all the white people and take everything that the white people have and give it to them. And we want to take all the children off the heterosexual people and give it to the homosexuals so that they can own them as property and do what they like with them because they're the privileged people. This is what they really mean. It's the imposter side of things. You know, they'll pretend to be good, and they'll come out with all these flowery words, all these utopian ideals that they have. And we know that what's really behind them is that there's people behind it that know that it's evil, that deliberately do it because it's evil, because they've said about this. And then you've got the gullible people that believe them and really do believe in diversity, and they really do believe in equality, and they think it's really good. And yet, you've got the rabbis speaking about it, that this is all a scam and this is what they're hoping to achieve by it. That's why you've got all these Jews that get involved in it. You look at Kevin MacDonald's work. I mean, he's documented it so much. All these movements in his Culture of Critique, All these movements, they all claim to be doing something to help out the Goyim. But when you actually look at it and look at what these groups are working at, they're all working to take down Western civilization and destroy the white race. And the Jews are quite open about that and saying that's what they want to do. And they're following the Talmud. And again, the Talmud, it teaches them to lie, tells them to lie to the Goyim, tells them to pretend to be somebody else. If you're going to do evil, go somewhere else and pretend to be someone else. And look at these Jews, these crypto Jews that pretend to be the part of the nation that they're in so that they can then subvert it. Well, this is the Satanism thing. This is Satan the imposter trying to be God. And this is why you've got a church now that's totally corrupted. People pretending to be speaking for the Bible when they're actually saying the complete opposite of what it says in the Bible. Claiming that God loves everyone. Homosexuals are fine. Race mixing is fine. Well, no, they're not. They're death penalty crimes in the Bible. It doesn't say anywhere that homosexuality is fine. Gay marriage is great. It will change with the times. It says that the word of the Lord stands forever. It doesn't change. And they'll say, oh, well, Christ preached a different message. No, he didn't preach a different message. He preached exactly the same message as the Old Testament. There's continuity between the two. You can't just say, oh, the Old Testament doesn't exist anymore. It was all changed. It wasn't. It all fits in with that. You can't ignore those laws. That's what he said. I come not to change the law, but to fulfill it. He came to show that it was possible to live by the law. But we're fallen people. We can't live by the law. So he paid that price for us. And that's been our faith. And that's what helped Europe to build itself into the civilization that we have today. It was built on these biblical laws. Alfred the Great, he got together the laws of the kings before him. And they're all really pretty much similar to the biblical law. And he made that into his law code, and that was the basis of Britain. And what did Britain do? World empire. You know, we discovered New Zealand, Australia, America, but these other nations now, these huge great countries that were spawned off from Britain, who had a very high respect for the Bible and a biblical law, and based everything on that. And now that we've let the Jews in, now we've emancipated the Jew in the French Revolution. He started attacking all of that and taking that out of everything. We've got to take the church away from the state. We can't have that having anything to do with it. And at the same time he's been doing that, taking the church out of everything, he's been infiltrating the church and changing all the teachings and telling the church how Christians should be interpreting the Bible. It makes me so angry when I hear these Jews talking about the Bible. It makes me furious because they're totally condemned in the Bible.
Exactly, yeah. But can I just say that the great drive behind this, and don't get me wrong, this was going on before they came about, but the Rothschilds, rule from behind the scenes, and, the Talmud is there, obviously, the way they want to see the world, and turn the world into a Jewish utopia. And the thing is, I was only thinking the other day, actually, I can't, because of everybody knows now the influence that the Rothschilds have on a lot of wars. I mean, some people wrongly think that he even funded Hitler, which I'm going to do a video on shortly to debunk as well, but that's for another time. But the Rothschilds have such a big influence on these wars. But, and I'll ask you this question, Sven, because at the moment you're the only person I'm talking to, but it goes out to people listening as well. Can anybody tell me, has the name of Rothschilds ever cropped up in a mainstream World War II documentary? Because I can't remember.
Never. Not that I remember it ever coming up.
If it wasn't for the internet, people would be absolutely clueless anyway. So, they are the people behind the curtain. And when these mainstream documentaries, World at War, for instance, I mean, they've got to mention him, and I think that went on longer than my documentary. No mention whatsoever, you see. So there is a hidden agenda, and these are the power behind the throne, so to speak. And they are, I do believe them to be Luciferian as well. So
I think they're kind of like the figureheads. Like I was saying before, you have these figureheads. If you look at the Jews as a whole, as being Antichrist, the whole religion is anti-Christian. The Talmud was written down in reaction to Christianity. Judaism itself was formed in reaction to Christianity, after Christianity. Talmud wasn't written down until the 5th, 6th century. So this religion of the rabbis that came about, that was all created as being against Christianity. So the whole basis of it is anti-Christian. And the people themselves, Christ said that they're the sons of the devil. And they were rejected by Christianity. They weren't a part of it. I mean, Kevin MacDonald shows this. The Jews were not a part of the early church. They were completely rejected by it. It's a modern thing to think that the Jews rejected Christ. It was Christ and the Christians who rejected the Jews after they killed him. So you've got this group of people that are an antichrist, and large members of them, like the Rothschilds, Jacob Schiff, Warburgs, these big bankers, they're like the heads of the beast. They are antichrist figureheads for the rest of the antichrist.
Interesting. Yeah.
They fulfill a role.
Sorry.
You know, they do fulfill a role. Yeah, we push against them.
I was just saying, there's a book out by Michael Collins Piper, who died last year, who did a great research into this, and actually it's got the New Babylon, if people want to know about it. And he talks about the connections in America of the Jewish families, the top 30 Jewish families who worked on behalf of the Rothschilds, and he names them all. And he also names, you know, some Christian families, or you know, pretend to be Christian, who also help the Rothschilds take over this empire of financial empire of America, and to the point where we are today. It's a fascinating book that he wrote there. So, yeah, you know, totally. This, to me, I'm convinced now, this is a war for destruction of Christian culture, and it's been going on. We've been going on for 2,000 years.
It's there to test us, Dennis. It's there to test us and to bring out the best in us. That's the struggle. Adolf Hitler's Mein Kampf, my struggle. If we didn't have the Jews, we wouldn't have anything to struggle against. It's just that, you know, we don't realize, we're failing to realize just how blessed and gifted we are, just what we're capable of. You know, we are capable of resisting them if we put our minds to it.
Yeah.
That's all we've got to do. Put our minds to it and have faith in ourselves, in our ancestors, and in our God.
Excellent.
Yeah, and then we'll win.
Correct.
Well, we're sort of getting up there to the last couple of minutes of the podcast now, Dennis.
Yeah.
I don't know if you want to let people know where they can find your work before we finish.
Yeah, well, greatstorynevertold.tv for the you can watch the video live online, and also come in and buy the back door, although it's not really completely at .tv. It's not properly completed, so you can join me on YouTube for the. We're up to 16 parts now, but this part about the death camps of Eisenhower will be going up sometime over the weekend, hopefully.
Will that be a part of Communism by the Back Door, or separate?
No, it's separate. It's separate. I do this every now and again. I just divert to just clear my head for the Communism one.
Yeah, so well, I look forward to that, and I'm sure everyone else does as well. Next week, there may not be a Truth Without Radio, but there will be something. There will be something pre-recorded, and it will be really good. So watch out for that, and we'll be back definitely with a live Truth Without Radio in 2 weeks' time. So thanks for coming on once again, Dennis, as always, and thank you very much, listeners, for listening. And we'll see you again next time.
Tuned in to